Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
And Miguel Vargas making his return here to Dodger Stadium. And earlier today, a cool scene on the field. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts delivering the 2024 World Series ring to Miguel Vargas, who spent the first half of the year with the Dodgers. There's a lot of memories, a lot of friends still on the Dodgers squad. A cool moment for Vargas.
It's a little bit of a strange moment, though. It's not that Vargas hasn't been with the Dodgers organization for a while. He had been. But specifically last season with the Dodgers, it wasn't a lot. But that's the beauty of it. You don't have to be on the team for a lot. You just have to be on the team. And he was last year. He played 30 games with the Dodgers. And then came over and played with the White Sox.
So Miguel Vargas, I don't know if he got a full share. The Dodgers gave out 79 full shares.
Wow, what was the number on that share?
The total of that share.
Because that's now like, that's part of an MLB pool, right?
Right. So the World Series champion got 36% of the pool. The losing team got 24%. The Dodgers gave out 79 full shares, 17 and a half partial shares, and $405,000 in just straight up cash awards. So here's how it worked out is that the Dodgers shares, let's see. Yeah. No, so 79 full shares, $477,000. $477,440.70 each.
So all the players that were on the playoff roster, you would imagine the 40-man roster, everyone got it. Then they usually take care of like the clubhouse guys and everything else.
Right. And that is not public. How they broke it down within the organization is not public, other than the numbers I just gave you.
I can't believe I've never asked this question, but you know I like geeky baseball stuff like this. Do broadcasters get a share?
I don't know the answer to that.
Did my guy Steven Nelson get a big old check at the end of the year?
It's a good question. Broadcasters who travel with the team? I don't know.
Like, did Pat Hughes get, obviously you get a ring. Did Pat Hughes get a share? Did someone break Pat off a check?
I've never asked a play-by-play person that.
Sounds like a really good thing for the
PBP, Voices of Baseball. You're right, all right? Any of those play-by-play folks that I get a chance to converse with, I don't know if they do.
Hold on. Before we continue, we also do need to do a point of order for something that did happen on yesterday's show or didn't happen on yesterday's show. During the show yesterday, Spees got a text from Bob Costas saying, call me. Yeah, nothing bad.
Yeah. It's true. That happened during the show.
It was in segment, and I suggested that if Bob Costas texts you during the show, you should take the call.
Like, thank you, Matt. Always a pleasure. Speak to you soon.
So just like no matter what we're doing, we're on live radio, Mr. Fella.
If there's breaking news and it's something like super serious, sure, you can wait until after the show. But if Boog's just calling in indiscriminately and Bob Costas is on line two, go take the call.
The mind did race with what Bob Costas might have wanted. That's true. And it raced for the rest of the show. It's okay. I called him after. Everything's good.
But you could have found out. And then that wouldn't have been racing through your mind.
But don't you think that Bob, as the hardworking broadcaster that he has always been, respects when you say, Bob, I'm on the air. Do you mind if I try you right after the show? Which is what I did. And he said, no problem. It's not time sensitive.
I just feel like the list isn't long, but that's a guy on the list that maybe. Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's some 25-year-old kid from Syracuse. I bet you was on the phone immediately in your stead.
I bet you years ago had a young Matt Spiegel gotten that text message. He would have been all over calling Mr. Costas back.
I will say, when I talked to him, he said, Matt, since I left you that text, I'm not going to do the voice because I can't. He said,
it's a hard one, right?
Yeah, it is. He said, since I left you that text, the question has become moot. And I was like, oh no, we found a new podcast partner.
Yeah, I told you.
There it is.
Now, Speaks, in the future, if he texts you, just give me a nod. I'll know it's the Costas nod. And you go out and you take that phone call.
The Costas signal has come out. But
it's just a microphone. Like, that's
all right, real talk. he has an emoji mix that he sends, which is amazing.
It's like of Ba.
Oh, it's just no. It's just like when you
NBC
like,
Peacock.
No, it's a thumbs up. Right, it's a thumbs up. It's a baseball, and it's the old time microphone. He was the first. That's his trio of emoji mixes.
And as Tanny rightfully points out, the thumbs up is now seen as passive aggressive.
But not to Bob. I don't believe that's passive aggressive.
Well, when you pair it with the microphone and the baseball, it's a lot more cool.
It's a lot more cool. So I have now sent that to a couple different broadcasters.
You can't do that.
I told each of them that I'm blatantly stealing it from Costas, and they love that. And
sweet brag from Norm Costas on top of it. Yeah, but I took this from Bob Costas, by the way.
But my point is, let that be part of Bob's legacy. Is this emoji mix for within the play-by-play community that everybody kind of incorporates the Costas emoji mix? I think that's actually kind of lovely. As part of his legacy.
You have my blessing the next time he texts during a show to go call him.
Okay.
I can handle the few minutes that you'll be gone.
All right, I'll share that.
It was like me going over to BBM. You had no problems handling the show last week.
Of course.
I'm going to start texting the onion emoji and say that I got it from Chuck Swirsky.
Big time onions!
No, like big and a clock. What is it for big?
I don't know. The muscle flex? Yeah, I don't know.
The muscle flex,
that's
a clock,
perfect.
And the onions. You should give it to him. Hook him up. I mean, that's the best.
That could be his signature trio of emojis.
It's like when Mark...
Every great broadcaster needs one.
That's right. They all need an emoji mix. And the Costas one, we know, and the big-time onions for Chuck.
All right, back to Vargas.
So back to Miguel Vargas. You referenced it to me. Regardless of how many games that he played there last year, dude was in the org for a long time. And friends and colleagues with a lot of guys coming up there together. Like, because I remember when he was on Hit and Run a few weeks ago, I'm like, so who were your guys in the Dodgers organization? And he said, Andy Páez, he was tight with, who's having a great year in center field. Michael Bush. And so he and Michael Bush were very, very tight in that org. Vargas yesterday was talking about, I think it was on the Sox Talk podcast with Chuck Garfine, saying that a conversation he had with Mookie Betts last year as a member of the Dodgers is one of the single greatest conversations of his life. And I'm sure, you know, Mookie helped him more than maybe Miguel helped Mookie, but you know how baseball works and life works. I bet Miguel Vargas was a worthwhile part of their endeavors over the last couple of years to win a World Series, even if he didn't have a big effect on the field.
I do wonder like how he felt about it. Like, and maybe he hasn't even processed it because he's like, oh, well, let me get through this series where I'm back playing against the Dodgers in LA. But I do wonder, like, do you get that? And you're like, I know that I could justify it, but did I actually earn it? You know, like, and maybe you're like, damn right I earned it. I rode those buses and I was a part of this organization for a long time and I played my 30 games. It's a weird space to be in.
How about this? I'll give you one extra level of it, which maybe makes it easier to accept. Without Michael Kopech, they don't win that World Series.
That's a good point.
And that's who Miguel Vargas got you. Michael Kopech was a big part of that bullpen and how they got through the playoffs and World Series, and Vargas got you that.
But that's the other part of this, Speaks, that I think is fascinating. The idea of, wow, I got a World Series ring, and they didn't feel like they needed me. I'm mm-hmm. happy to have this ring. Where'd they send you? To the worst team
I know
ever.
I know, but you know, it's like
ever.
You talk to Ryan Dempster, and during the entirety of Kyle Hendricks' Cubs career, Ryan Dempster was super proud to have been traded for Kyle Hendricks. Everything that Hendricks did, he'd be like, yeah, yeah, hell yeah. That I helped the organization get that guy. You know?
Yeah, but Demp was out of the game by then, right? When they won it, he was out of the game in 16.
Yes, he was out of the game.
If you're Vargas, sure. You're like, oh.
I guess, yeah. Did this without me, huh?
Yeah, did this without me, and here I am with my team that's a little bit better.
Yeah.
But still one of the worst teams in baseball.
But you also look at that team and like, well, let's see. They got Muncy over there at third. They got Freddie Freeman over there at first.
And Mookie Betts playing.
Mookie Betts is playing short. Who's playing second for the most part? Edmund these days? Tommy Edmund? Like, they got ballers, man. There was no spot for him. No spot for Miguel Vargas.
Well, Dodgers radio talked about Vargas.
Former Dodger Miguel Vargas. First baseman leads off, right-handed hitter facing Yamamoto, who fires in a strike. It's all for Miguel. Glad to be back and see a lot of familiar faces. And one thing that a lot of people around the ball club have noticed about him, last year I think he was a little bit upset to have been traded and kind of carried that with him into Chicago, but they say he's a different guy this year. Very good to be around, and he's been their best player.
You know, with Vargas, Tim, I think the other part too is he realized, and he's comfortable now in his own skin, but he realized it was actually a good deal for him. He was not going to play every day with the Dodgers, not with the personnel that they had, and not with the personnel they have this year.
No.
So it gave him really a chance to spread his wings and fly.
It gave him a new lease on life. And granted, the White Sox, the win-loss column, for somebody who wants to win a lot, and that should be every player, it just wasn't happening for the White Sox. But at the same time, as you say, Vargas, he transitioned from the outfield back into third base. Now he's been at first base, and the report that I got from him earlier today on his play at first is that he's above average.
How about that? That's Tim Neverett and Rick Monday on the radio call there.
It's an interesting question that I think a lot of people would ponder in all sorts of situations. Would you rather be playing every day, or would you rather be playing part-time and winning a World Series?
Well, it sure sounds like last year he would have answered the second one, the latter. And that this year, at least, he's got his mind wrapped around the former. There's definitely a new lightness to Miguel Vargas, doing a lot of media and having good success at the plate now since he made the move with his hands. And even just his openness to do that with the org. That's good context from Tim Neverett and Rick Monday right there.
Is he now the White Sox representative for the All-Star game?
Boy, it's a good question, because Shane Smith has been killing
it. It's been a rough month for Shane Smith, though.
And a month and a half, really. The last seven starts for Shane Smith, who got lit up last night, 31 innings pitched, an ERA of 6.68 in his last seven starts. It's now a pretty big sample. It's three in a row, I think 5-5-6 in terms of earned runs over just the last three starts.
The ERA is still below four, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he had done enough to just be that, but I'm trying to think is there anyone else on the White Sox that you would think would even qualify?
I'll give you two. Okay.
Who you got?
Well, first is the aforementioned Miguel Vargas. We can look at first base in the American League. It's obviously extremely, extremely crowded, but they've got to pick somebody, right? So among first basemen in the American League, you're talking about Jonathan Aranda of Tampa. Ryan O'Hearn is having a big year for Baltimore. Vlad Guerrero, Spencer Torkelson, all those guys are above an 800 OPS. How about Adrian Hauser? Has he pitched enough?
Ooh.
I mean, you're talking about a guy whose ERA is 1.90. I think is it just seven starts? That might not be enough.
Hmm?
It might not be enough.
He's a 2-1 war.
He's a 2-1 war already in just seven starts, I think.
I think that's probably your answer.
Think so?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anybody in that pen.
It's not a ton of innings. It's only 42 2/3, but
no, that's not a lot of innings at all. But that's probably not enough. But it's probably still going to be Shane Smith.
To be a 2-war,
yeah.
Like, to put it into perspective, Shane Smith, 0.9 war.
Really?
Yeah, 0.9 B war for him. Let me look up Fangraphs real quick. Because I think
Hauser's that much ahead of Shane Smith in WAR.
Yeah,
that's insane to me, considering how much more Shane Smith has pitched.
Let's see here. See what Fangraphs has. Now, Fangraphs has it right. They've got him at 1.1 WAR. I think maybe I read it wrong. Hang
might
on.
Have been.
I might have done career.
No.
If you take the war and you put it
in
the...
This season,
you're right, Lawrence.
Hauser's a 2.1 war.
Holy bejesus.
In seven starts. That's amazing, actually.
Yeah, it really is. That's how good he's been. We got to ask John Palmarosi about Hauser. Because, like, that's a pure rental as a starting pitcher. Should the Cubs actually be thinking about Adrian Hauser the way that they're thinking about Merrill Kelly and some of these other rental possibilities?
Think how wild that is. A guy who had to Uber down from Milwaukee and start on the same day could be in the All-Star game for the White Sox.
It's an amazing story.
Yeah, I think John said he's one of their bigger trade chips right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and you look at it, he's a 32-year-old guy that doesn't cost a lot of money. And maybe it's he's one of those lightning in a bottle guys.
Maybe he's figured something out. And Craig Counsell knows him from their years together in Milwaukee. I mean, you want Adrian Hauser, you want Zach Eflin as a rental from Baltimore. But you know, the other day, I guess it was yesterday, you were like, why not two? Why not both? Maybe you get two, and Hauser's one of them. You know,
that would make sense.
Yeah, it would, because you could bump Colin Ray to the pen. And it'd be nice to have another to have a five in that regard.
Some interesting stuff.
They
there.
Don't have to worry about Cade Horton. You could even make Cade Horton a bullpen piece if you really wanted to.
Because there, I mean, I guess the argument for Vargas is really difficult, and I think Shane Smith up until a month ago had earned it.
Yes,
but if you're just looking at the raw WAR number, it's Hauser.
Yeah, I still like Shane Smith.
Me too.
It's a really nice story.
It would be a great reward for him. But I also would get if they said, no, he's been bad leading into this.
Texture says, do you think every team should have a representative of the All-Star game? I'm a yes. I've always been a yes on that. I don't think that all of them need to play.
They just need to come out and wave.
Yeah. Just wave. Get some applause.
White Sox.
Represent. Seeing the intros, especially this year, that they're all going to be wearing their actual team uniforms.
So much better.
Finally, it's been that way for all the years except since 2019 to 2024. Now we're back to them wearing their uniforms. Let them get introduced. Let them get cheered. Let the kids see, there's my guy. But they don't necessarily have to play because they try to win the game. Try to manage and win the game.
It's important to win the game. We need to take a break from baseball, and we need to talk a little bit about buckets. Zach Harper is going to join us. He's had some thoughts on what the Bulls have done.
Yeah.
So we're going to pick his brain about what the Bulls are doing or not doing. The stuff that's going on in Milwaukee is fascinating, too.
And then you love hating on the Knicks.
Man, they deserve it. They deserve it. And I'm going to laugh heartily on when it comes to you ended up with Mike Brown. Not even the best Mike Brown.
Oh, Mike Brown rankings coming to transition tomorrow.
Yeah, I think. The one that wore number 30 is number one, yeah. I think.
Well, let's see. There's a lot of Mike Browns.
There are. There's the one that ran the Cincinnati Bengals, right? There's that Mike Brown. He's lower on the list.
I did the Mike White rankings a few years back. A lot of Mike Whites out there.
There were. It was when the quarterback
this
was
when,
doing really
when
well.
The quarterback, and I
for
was
the
like,
Jets?
Oh. Yeah, I was like, oh, man, I got to add him into the big pile of Mike Whites. White Lotus, Mike White, is currently number
at the
one.
Top.
Yeah, he's currently number one.
That's fair.
But Mike Brown rankings, that's a whole nother. I got to get the scientists and all the collaborators involved.
We'll get into that. But before we do that, we will talk with Zach Harper about the Bulls, the NBA, and much, much more. This is the Spiegel and Holmes Show. You can check us out on the Score or the Odyssey app or the iHeartRadio app. Back after this.
Listen to the Spiegel and Holmes Show on the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
Talking to Zach Harper from The Athletic.
Zach Harper.
Zach Harper at Talk Hoops.
I enjoy talking with Zach Harper when he's on the show.
One of my favorite guys I listen to a lot, Zach Harper.
Our guest today, Zach Harper, national NBA staff writer and podcast host of The Athletic, radio host, Sirius XM NBA Radio. I listen to it all the time, and Mad Dog Sports Radio. Chris, you got excited when I mentioned this, the host of Cinephobe Podcast. Why'd you get so excited, Chris, at the Cinephobe?
Yeah, because Zach is a movie head, and the whole Cinephobe series, dog. I mean, you got to really just experience it, MJ, to really get it. You know, you got to be in it. You got to be in it to experience it.
Okay.
But it's off the hook. It's legendary.
Appreciate that.
You would love it. You would love it, MJ, because you're a movie head. You're a thespian. Well, you're a theater arts major. Yeah, so you get it all.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
There's so much stuff going on in the NBA, and it feels like Chicago is not a part of it. There's a lot happening around the league, and it just doesn't feel like the Bulls are in on
any of it.
Where do you think they are in terms of interesting teams in the NBA?
I think they're very low, which is part of the reason that we wanted to talk with Zach Harper about it, because he's been writing about all of the transactions that have been going on. And you see like a little blurb about, oh, yeah, the Bulls kind of did this thing.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know what they're doing, and no one knows what they're doing.
No disrespect to Trey Jones, but let's move on.
Yeah, that's kind of where all of us are at. So Zach is now joining us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Zach, thanks so much for joining us. How would you describe, let me formulate this question properly.
Hey, let me jump in. Why are the Bulls, Zach, why?
Reinsdorf?
It's a good answer.
Well, come on, you just traded for Isaac Okoro. You know, that's something. That's he was a top five pick once. That's a thing.
Yeah,
you know,
they now got three of those from that draft on their team.
Sure, yeah. But I mean, like, they held on to Lonzo Ball at the deadline when apparently there was a one out there, and now they give him up for Isaac Okoro. It's like none of it makes sense to us. Do you see any logic in the big picture plan that the Bulls seem to be executing?
I mean, they are accumulating young talent, right? Like there is that. I don't know if any of it is great young talent. It's not bad young talent. Like there is somewhat of a plan there. I think it's not just like a lot of old bloated contracts anymore. So I do think that that's progress. I do think that they could stand to be a little worse in terms of trying to get a higher lottery pick. I know that's not like a fun answer because you don't want to see awful basketball all the time, but that is kind of the way to rebuild, right? You got to be terrible and then you got to hope that you get some lottery luck, and especially in like this draft or the next draft, there's some you know, big time rookies there or prospects there that you would want to add to your franchise. But you know, like Josh Giddey was a great pickup, you know, in terms of giving up Alex Crusoe. Josh Giddey is a guy that they'll retain in restricted free agency, and he was a great pickup. You know, Patrick Williams hasn't really worked out the way that they were hoping to, but he's not bad. Kobe White has taken a massive leap forward, so that's exciting. Like there's good talent on the team, just none of it is like number one material.
And I feel like that's kind of the problem, is that you do have all these guys that if you tilt your head sideways and you squint, like you can understand why the Bulls are doing what they're doing. But as far as like a big plan, it doesn't seem like any of it is going to allow for the Bulls to be a significant player in the Eastern Conference for, and I think that I'm being really generous with this, Zach, for at least the next two seasons.
I mean, the thing is that the East is like wide open. I mean, I think if you were looking at the Eastern Conference last season, yeah, I would agree with you that, hey, there's no real pathway to actually being relevant here. The Bulls still don't have an easy pathway into jumping into that definite, like, yeah, this is a playoff team, but it is way more open than it was, you know, even 3 months ago. So I think there's more of an open door there that they can find their way into. You are just like a trade or two away, and I'm not saying like, hey, you trade for Giannis and now all of a sudden like that door is open. Like I don't think it's that extreme, but there are ways that the Bulls have set themselves up to where maybe they can be savvy in making trades to go take advantage of maybe some players that aren't exactly, you know, happy in their situations. I unfortunately don't know who those players might be just yet, but those guys do pop up like out of nowhere consistently in the NBA, because the NBA is a very dramatic, chaotic, petty league. And so we do get that action like quite a bit in the NBA. But I do think like it's not quite as dire as it was. They do have a lot of flexibility that they didn't have, you know, a year or two ago when it was Vooch and it was DeRozan and it was Zach LaVine. Like, you know, I think that there's more flexibility now than there was, and you need that flexibility to be able to take advantage of those situations. But yeah, in terms of talent on the roster, it is still a play-in tournament team.
Man, Zach Harper joining us from The Athletic and from SiriusXM in NBA Radio. So Zach, you mentioned Giannis. They went out and got Miles Turner, though. Are we sure, definitively, do we know, are the Bucks going to move on or not going to move on? Is the league buying that the Bucks are trying to get better and keep him? Where are things, in your opinion?
I mean, it's a $49 million Miles Turner. I know that I know it says he's making $27 million a year, but you got to tack on that $22 million a year in dead cap space that they have committed to stretching Damian Lillard's deal there, because that's the reason they did it, so that they could afford to bring in Miles Turner into cap space. So that, like, that's really a $49 million Miles Turner for the next four seasons.
Wow.
And then just $22 million of dead cap space that fifth season afterwards. It's an expensive risk, and it is a big time risk. And I don't know that Giannis is going to look at that and be like, yep, we did it. Like, what, this is the same as going and getting Drew Holiday, or this is the same as going and getting Damian Lillard, even though that didn't work out. But they was really like the only thing they could do. Like the other trade asset was, I don't know, Kyle Kuzma. That didn't work out. Like no one's going to give you anything significant for Kuzma. Like he's kind of fallen off a cliff in terms of, like, he was a pretty solid role player 2 years ago. And then I don't know what happened. Like the Wizards just got to him or something. He got wizard fired. I don't know what happened there, but it got bad and they just don't have any flexibility. And so this was the best they could do. I don't think they're going to outright just admit, yep, we got to get rid of Giannis and see what we can get for him. I don't think that they're ever going to get to that point. I think they would make him, you know, say like, I need to move on, because them tanking doesn't do any good. They don't have control of their first round draft picks until 2031. So them being bad doesn't benefit them. They can't go get top picks in the draft with their own draft. So they have to just be as competitive as they can be for as long as they can be. Any trade that they do, if Giannis does say, okay, it's time for me to move on, has to involve good players now that can help them remain competitive, future draft picks that can help them restock that draft chest, and then young players that they can develop that will be pretty good down the road. I mean, it's a full trade package, and there are plenty of teams out there that will offer that up because it's Giannis, but he's got to be the one to pull the ripcord on that parachute.
What do you think was Miles Turner's motivation to sign in Milwaukee? Because there's a lot of speculation about it, Zach, that one, it's the money. Two, it was being tired of being a trade topic for Indiana. But the Bucks and the Pacers, like, those are two franchises that don't really like each other. And for Miles Turner to leave a team that just played in the finals and was one game away from winning it to go into Milwaukee for an extended period of time, there are a lot of people in Naptown that are hurt over that.
Yeah, I don't know if you can be tired of being a trade topic if you go on an ESPN podcast years ago and map out why you should be a Laker. I don't know if you get to like play that card of like, I'm sick of being on the trade block when you tried to like basically get yourself traded to the Lakers a few years ago. But yeah, like no one wants to be on the trade block every year. The Pacers didn't want to pay him what he wanted to get paid. Like by all accounts, they said all the right things publicly and they did want to bring him back. But I think they looked at the way that he played in the conference finals and played in the finals, and it wasn't worth it to them to, you know, with Tyrese Haliburton out for the next year, and maybe it's 2 years, not out, but just not being himself. Are you going to commit $25, $27, $28 million to a guy that isn't totally reliable, isn't the defender that he used to be? Still a good defender, but not a defensive player of the year candidate. He's not a guy that rebounds. He's not a guy that, you know, play makes for others. He's still a good starting center in this league, but that's big money for a team that doesn't typically spend a lot of money. So they are frugal, right? They have built a team a certain way. And I think for him, all right, if you're not going to outright respect him, I did help this team get to the finals, whatever, no matter what, you know, kind of negotiation tactics they want to use, he's going to say, all right, who else can pay me out here? Well, it was Brooklyn who had cap space, or no one else really had the money. Milwaukee did some creative accounting to enable to get that money. That was really his only other option, or take a big pay cut with Indiana, or take a one-year deal and risk, you know, injury going into next free agency. Like, he didn't have a lot of options. So I think he just decided, okay, I'll go to Milwaukee. This is about as good a deal as I can get. And we'll hopefully see if Giannis sticks around with me.
Who is going to step up in a newly wide open East, thanks to three Achilles? I mean, is anybody
three Achilles in a bad coaching move?
We'll get to that. So yeah, maybe aside from the Knicks, since Lawrence is dying to get to that, and we will. Who else might step up?
I mean, Orlando looks really good. Orlando was, you know, they took Cleveland to seven games 2 years ago. They were injured a lot this year, but still pretty competitive in that series against Boston. And they are now healthy going into next season. They've got a great rotation. They bring in Desmond Bane. They gave up a lot for Desmond Bane. He's expensive, but he's exactly the type of player they need in terms of three-point shooting and playmaking. And then bringing in Tyus Jones on a one-year, $7 million deal is the perfect point guard for them. He doesn't turn the ball over. He's great at shooting the ball. He's, you know, an okay defender, but he can defend within the team concept, and they have great defenders around him. So he's going to put Paolo Banchero, like, if you watch their games over the last couple of years, it's a really good, exciting young team that plays defense. Every bucket they got was laborious. I mean, it took so much for them to get buckets every single possession. He and Bane are going to make that a much easier process. So I think they're going to be in a great position as long as they're healthy. I think Detroit's going to have a nice chance to take a step forward. Everyone's now talking Atlanta, and they are doing the right things, and I am intrigued. It's still the Hawks. I still got to see it to believe it before I'm just going to outright buy in. We can do the whole if Philadelphia is healthy dance, and it's a dance we're all very familiar with. So sure, yeah, the Knicks are obviously, you know, a topic that where they're going to be there. Cleveland, look, that I'm still skeptical of them in a postseason setting. Everyone's kind of forgiving them for what's happened the last 3 years. I still got to see it to believe it, but they are the most talented team in the Eastern Conference. But to me, Orlando is the one that if we're going to see another Pacers type run, I think it's Orlando.
There's some breaking news that DeAndre Ayton is going to be a Laker. Sure. Does that do anything for LeBron choosing to stay a Laker?
I think the $52.6 million is what LeBron chose to stay a Laker. I think that's what it is you can't get that anywhere else. That's the easy choice is, hey, do you want half a hundred million or do you want to go not get that anywhere else because no one else has cap space? Like that's the choice there. I mean, Ayton is not Jackson Hayes. That's, you know, he's better than Jackson Hayes. Like that's an upgrade. He is still someone that, you know, you've got to hope shows up to things on times or, you know, he did get iced into his house
at
one point in Portland, which is still one of the funniest reasons to miss a game. He's someone who's super talented. He's athletic. He is a good player. He's just someone that you don't really trust to show up game after game after game. And so I think Ayton he's an upgrade. It's almost by default. Maybe this will motivate him. Maybe the quote unquote shame of being bought out. But I also wonder, like, can you motivate a guy who has made $172 million in his career, and unless he is just horrendous with money, probably has a nice little nest egg to fall back on, and I don't know that he needs that motivation. I mean, this is all up to him. He can be one of the best centers in the league, and that sounds, you know, maybe extreme to some people, but he is that good. He was a starting center on an NBA Finals team, and it wasn't just by default. He was good in that run. It's all up to him. It's just, like, nobody knows if he's going to be motivated at all.
All right, is it a failure if the Knicks end up with Mike Brown, which seems to be what's going to happen here?
No, he's a good coach. Like, I think this is the best case scenario for the options that were there. Mike Malone is the exact same coach as Tom Thibodeau. Like, the exact same. It's just, I don't know how you run the give the ball to Nikola Jokic offense if he's not on your team. Like, that's my question. Like, and I'm not saying Mike Malone is a bad coach or not a great coach. He's the exact same coach as Tom Thibodeau. Everything that Tom Thibodeau did that got him fired, Mike Malone would come in and do. It's the exact same thing. And so I just don't see how that would have been an upgrade. I don't think Taylor Jenkins is as good a coach as Tom Thibodeau. I think any of the assistant coaches like Mike Anori or Johnny Bryant or any of these guys, they come in and, like, yeah, these are guys that people believe that's an assistant coach who's a hot name who will be a good coach one day. And I'm on board with that, but you don't know how a veteran team is going to latch on to those guys and believe in them. So those are risks. James Borrego, really smart guy, got a raw deal in Charlotte, I think twice actually. And so maybe he would be someone who is a fresh idea there. But I think Mike Brown has been a really good coach in this league. If he has a good assistant staff, he's kind of what they need. The problem with Mike Brown is he is also someone who can be very blunt and very hard on his players. And that seems to allegedly have been a bit of a problem with Tom Thibodeau. I think the good news is he's way more apt at adapting to smaller lineups, to trying some things out. But he's also a very rigid guy when it comes to discipline. I think he's someone who adapts to his roster, though. If it's a team that, you know, needs to play a little bit different style, we saw that in Sacramento. I mean, he got the Kings to the playoffs. The Kings hadn't made the playoffs since The Departed was in theaters. That matters. If you get the Kings to the playoffs, you are a good coach. They went through like 10 coaches before him and couldn't do that. I think he's the best hire available.
Well, before we let you go, we do have one xenophobe thing to ask you.
Yeah.
And that is the quarterback of the Bears, Caleb Williams, mm-hmm. went to go see F1 and ranked it a top three movie for him all time. What were the other two movies?
The other two movies were Good Will Hunting and The Dark Knight. I have seen F1. I don't know if you've seen F1.
No.
But yeah.
It doesn't sound like you're going to either, Zach.
I mean, I'll see it eventually. It's got to stream at some point, right? Like, I'll see it. I don't know if I'm dying. Like, look, I watched the Netflix show. I tried to get into it. I just don't care about racing. Like, it doesn't do anything for me. I've tried. I've tried NASCAR. I've tried F1. I've tried any of that. Like, I watched Biker Boys. Like, I've tried to get into racing in so many different ways, and I couldn't do it. Unless it's Fast and the Furious, I'm just not into car racing, and they're just superheroes now. So that doesn't even count anymore. Like, I'm in Brad Pitt, sure, sign me up. I'm into Brad Pitt movies. But, like, Good Will Hunting, Dark Knight, F1, like, Caleb Williams, no offense, you're all over the place here. Like, yeah, I feel like he's just making that list up. I don't even think that's his real list.
Yeah, no, it's maybe his dad wrote it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, maybe.
So it's possible. I got one if we're doing this. Why is Mozart a fraud? What's up with that?
Okay, I believe he played the music. There's no evidence he wrote it.
Oh.
I just don't buy that. This is a conspiracy I'm fully in on. I think his dad wrote it. I got to be honest. I think, like, no child's writing that good music at 6, 7, 8 years old, whatever the story is. I just don't buy it. There's no evidence. I'm never going to believe it.
It's a long time ago. What kind of evidence do you want?
Exactly. It's a long time ago. Not to go all Tyler Hero here, but there's just no evidence here to suggest that we can prove it.
Yes, Tyler Hero doesn't believe anything that happened before 1951.
Uh-oh.
I've got bad company. I just realized I'm in bad company.
Yep, you've got bad allies,
my friend.
You put yourself there. Zach, this was delightful, man. Thanks so much for jumping on with us.
Anytime. Appreciate it, guys.
It's Zach Harper from The Athletic.
He's tremendous.
Xenophobe. And I love that.
So did he dilute your Knicks
no,
venom at all?
No.
Give it to us when we come back.
When we come back, we're going to laugh at the Knicks. That's next here on The Score.
Well, I can say this. It's not my story to exactly tell, but the scumminess that went on this past year behind closed doors with the Knicks, they should all be ashamed, and they'll all get what they have coming because the way it's playing out. I mean, if you want to be a scumbag and you want to be a cockroach and just survive in this league, you'll eventually be exposed, and I think there's going to be a lot of people at the Garden that are going to be exposed.
It's Joe Cowley, and I don't think he's wrong. This whole thing with the Knicks was just bizarre, and
tell
I love
me,
it.
Tell me.
The fact that they got farther than they've been in 25 years and looked around at the coaching landscape, the available coaching landscape, I think there is a level of arrogance that has been around the Knicks as an organization. You usually hear from their fan base, but I think this was actually ownership being arrogant of like, oh, we're going to make the Knicks job available and everyone's going to flock to it.
I bought it because of New York, because of how good they looked, because of how close they got to the finals, because of the way the East was coming back to the pack.
The basketball reasons make more sense than New York writ large.
That team was so damn fun in the playoffs. I mean, obviously, I know you hate them, which I think might be part of the take here.
No, but I what I'm saying, though, is that the basketball, like, hey, this is a good team. Yeah. Who wouldn't want to coach a good team? That actually makes sense. What doesn't make sense is, well, it's New York. It's the media capital of the world. And who wouldn't want to be the Knicks head coach? A lot of people don't. And the fact that you're like, well, Jay Wright'll certainly, these are all his guys. All of his Villanova guys are here except for one.
Yeah.
So we'll do that. No, I'm good. I'm good. And you go down the list of people. Oh, we'll just take a coach.
Well, and all the other teams were like, I don't know who you think you are.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's organizational arrogance. Like, Ime Udoka will surely leave Houston and the thing that he's built there to come here. No, I'm good. And then you go down the list. You get all the way to Billy Donovan. And Billy was like, even though I'm from there, I'm good. I don't want your job either. My job's pretty great. That's the thing that you go, that's some Knicks-ish right there.
I hear you. I hear you. And I think the idea has been that it was owner arrogance, but I'm not so sure.
Word on the street is that he had been distracted with other projects, and as the team got better, he got more re-involved in what was going on with the team. And
he got re-engaged and didn't like, what, Tibbs' work ethic? Tibbs' sweatpants?
I'm sure that there is probably an element of players being tired of Tibbs and the way that he runs it, because we know that that's a thing. That people do appreciate the tough love to a degree, but maybe it gets a little stale and old. But when you see the results that you saw this year, even with some questionable choices of shortening the rotation and when he was getting players in and out of games, even with that as a backdrop, there's a lot there to build on if you're the Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, look, Rick Carlisle outcoached Tom Thibodeau. In a big way in that series.
Similar guys, too.
Well, but it's interesting. I'm with Zach Harper, though, and like, because here's the thing. I was one of those people who thought they'd get their pick in terms of the quality of the job, and that has not been how it's gone. But Mike Brown, I think Mike Brown's a pretty darn good coach who can actually understand the modern athlete and thread that needle a little bit more.
I think
De'Aaron Fox didn't like him, and that thing blew up there. But are we sure that De'Aaron Fox deserves all that kind of respect?
I think Mike Brown is a solid coach. I still think it's a downgrade. I think you had a superior coach, and for whatever reason, and it might be Tibbs, you couldn't let this thing continue on the trajectory that it was on. For whatever reason, and then you thought you were going to get whoever you wanted. And like some of the things were kind of interesting. I love the idea of them inviting Dawn Staley up and being like, what do you think, Dawn? She'd be on a list for me of people that I would call. But even Dawn was like, I'm good. I don't need all of this. I don't need these headaches. I run a kingdom in Columbia, South Carolina. A kingdom. I'm good. Keep this nonsense that you guys got going on up here. Ridiculous.
We are 1 hour away from All-Star Game starters being announced.
Yeah.
For Major League Baseball. Lawrence, you have been on the stump for one particular Cub to make the team, and I think you're on it. I think that's going to get rewarded. So I'm here to present Mr. Validation. I, too, of course, am also Mr. Validation. So Misters and Mr. Validation will be here. No, but I think you're right. But I got reasons that you might not have considered as to why you're going to be right.
Ooh, I like that. I like to find out why I don't know stuff. That's next here on The Score.
Cubs fans.